Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Quick Save, our gaming segment of Comic Book Nation here hosted by comicbook.com. I am your host, Logan Moore. Today we're talking about Fallout. Once again, if you've been paying attention to the feed, this is the week that Fallout, the TV series, is released on Prime Video, and we're going to be diving into even more related to the series today. Joining me once again to do that is Charlie Ridgely. Charlie, hi.
Hi, everybody.
And we've also got Chris Killian back here, who just finished Fallout this morning.
But why are you guys both wearing hats? I'm not allowed to wear hats. John Mason tells me
I'm not allowed to wear hats in interviews.
What the? Oh, but we're allowed to wear hats in podcasts?
I don't know.
I feel like I wear a hat every single week doing this.
And yeah, I always wear hats. I stopped in interviews because John has to stop in interviews, so I don't wear hats in interviews.
Man, I hate it. I don't know why he hates hats so much.
I wear a hat every week on this episode, on this podcast. If you come back on, you can rock a hat, Chris.
I'm gonna leave right now just to go get a hat. I feel left out right now.
If you want to go for it, if there's
one. You guys do the setup. I'm gonna go grab a hat. I'll be right back.
That's actually a good segue here because we do have a lot to set up before we dive into the content of this episode. So typically, Quick Save here is a weekly gaming show. As part of Comic Book Nation, we'll talk about general gaming news. Today's episode is going to be different. We are going full spoilers for the Fallout TV series. Everything that we're going to talk about throughout this episode is going to be riddled with spoilers for the entire series.
All 8 episodes.
All 8 episodes. All 3 of us have seen the full series at this point. So we're going to break down everything and what we think will happen in season 2, what we want from a season 2, and just generally what we think about what we think about how this first season progressed. To that end, We have a Fallout review also live on the feeds. If you don't want to be spoiled, if you want to just hear us talk generally about what we thought about the series, you can find that on the Comic Book Nation feed as well. And then you can come back here and you can listen to us chat about the spoilers once you have watched the show for yourself. So, Chris, I like your hat.
Hey, thanks. I don't have the confidence to rock it backwards like you guys do, but...
It's not confidence. It's having a fat head. I have a fat head.
So what are you talking about? No, that's you, not, not have a fat head. Gotta,
backwards is how it works.
I was influenced by Ken Griffey Jr. as a six-year-old, and I've always worn my hats backwards as a result.
Well, I also have this weird flip in my hair, so I'm afraid if I wear it backwards that it's just going to make it the flip more pronounced. It'll come out. So, yeah, so I'm just going to keep it like this. But now that I have a hat, it's okay. I feel like I'm part of the club. And this is exciting. I'm so excited to talk about spoilers because, like we mentioned yesterday, I have not played the games, so yes. I have lots of questions for you guys as guys who have really played the games a lot more than I have.
Yeah, and we're going to. I want to pick your brain about some of what's happened here. And Charlie is obviously, if you didn't listen to our previous episode, Charlie is kind of our Fallout expert here on staff, so he'll have a lot of nerdier stuff to say about the video game series at large. Anyway, with all that being said, we're going to dive into spoilers. So yeah. This is your last chance to click off this episode or come back later. And with that being said, New Vegas in season two, this seems to be where we're going.
It feels like we have to start there. So yeah. The ending of the show, not even talking about what happens at the end of the show, but the very last frame of the show is what you're seeing on the screen right now. It is in... looking out over New Vegas, the city that we know from the beloved game Fallout New Vegas. And it's the first real like diehard connection to a thing from the game, you know, mm-hmm. from any of the games. There's like little Easter eggs, but this is the first like, oh, we are now going to explore something the game's explored. Because season one is largely separated from the storyline of the game.
It has the most ties to the original Fallout, but not in terms of story,
but not in terms of like... what's the actual content, you know, because that took place in DC and in the Capital Wasteland. This is out in
Fallout
California.
3,
so
I'm right. talking Fallout.
Oh, the original Fallout. Yeah.
Yes. But not a lot of people have played that game. So
yeah. And there's not stuff to see in it. You know, it's recognizable because it's a different format. But this, you know, Kyle MacLachlan's character, Hank, we learn in the finale is kind of evil. All of Vault-Tec
kind of evil.
Is evil. We'll dive into that. Hank is kind of evil compared to other parts of Vault-Tec. He is pretty evil, but we learn about his kind of history, and he escapes with some power armor in the final scenes, and he goes off to Lord knows where to escape his daughter, who now believes that he is wrong, the ghoul who wants him dead, but also wants to know where his family is, which we'll dive into that. But the last thing we see is... him walking through a desert. He walks past the skull of a Deathclaw, which is very cool because we didn't see a Deathclaw in there. It is. We didn't see a Deathclaw in the series to this point. And then we see him walking up. He looks out over this canyon and we see Fallout, or we see New Vegas, the city that we love. And what's really, really neat about that, and Logan, I know you have some things to say about this. In the game of Fallout or Fallout New Vegas, when you end the story, which that game takes place 15 years before this show, the decisions you make at the end determine the future of New Vegas. The whole game is about a power struggle between a couple of big factions, and you're kind of this go-between to all of them. And at the end of the game, you make a decision essentially as to who takes power in the city. So now we get this confirmation that Fallout, the TV show, is going to explore New Vegas 15 years in the future. Which essentially means that one of those endings is getting canonized through the show.
Do you have a guess of which one it will be?
I have a guess, yeah.
I think they could totally undo everything, though.
They could absolutely
undo
everything.
Because, like you said, there's a 15 or 20-year time gap between the end of that game and where the TV show is at. They could absolutely, you know.
If one faction
took over New Vegas for a period of a couple years and then everything went to hell.
If they're going to keep one of the endings of New Vegas, though. I think House makes the most sense.
Are there any, to kind of follow up on that, are there any characters, and that maybe you just answered that for me, that you're expecting to show up that were in New Vegas?
I'm about expecting, but again, you know, Mr. House is kind of the big, like, overlord type character. And we know that Hank, again, at the end of the show, is going to get help for his cause. And we know that, you know, the quote from the ghoul there at the end, he says, you look out at this wasteland, it looks like chaos, but there's always somebody behind the wheel. And that's who I want to talk to. That's where your daddy's headed. That's what he says to Lucy. And it makes it seem like he knows that Hank is going to find someone a little more powerful, that there's somebody making decisions bigger than Hank. And that makes me seem like there's somebody there that is a huge deal. Whether that be Mr. House, whether that be Barb, Cooper's wife from
this could be before just the completely war. New characters it could be as well. I mean, we're going to get new characters in the next season for sure.
We could see absolutely no one from the New Vegas game, which that wouldn't surprise me either.
I think honestly, I think that's the best path forward, to be honest with you, because people are I've already seen I talked to you about this earlier, Charlie, but I've already seen some scuttlebutt online about the fact that New Vegas is even getting introduced and how they're going to weave in the canon of that game with the TV series. And people have already got some problems with how they're doing all of that. And I don't think there's any problems to this point. But people are going to be very specific because the Fallout series at large is always one that, yes, it's set in America. Yes, it's set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, but you're going to a different region each time. If season two is really going to hone in on New Vegas and you're going to have Hank going there and you're going to have the ghoul and Lucy tracking him down and inevitably ending up there themselves, then that's going to be the first very major crossover with a modern Fallout game. Again, right. Fallout 1 was in the show, but elements of Fallout 1 were present in the show. Discusses
Shady Sands as a place.
Yes, yeah, and that has ties to the NCR and stuff like that. Chris, with you, I mean, did this ending mean anything? I mean, obviously, Charlie and I are very excited about like this final stinger tease, but for you, was it just like, oh, okay, there's a town, I guess?
Oh, like, no, I knew something was coming because of what you guys had said yesterday that like the last scene sort of hinted at you know, a video game crossover kind of thing. But no, as someone who did not play New Vegas, it meant nothing to me other than like, oh yeah, they're going somewhere new.
I think they're going to really try to separate it from the game too, because I don't think they want people feeling like they have to have played the games in order to be fully.
Well, and I don't feel that way about this.
Go ahead. We may have lost him.
Oh, we lose Chris.
We may have lost Chris, unfortunately. Chris has been having internet struggles today, so if he pops in and out.
So here. To piggyback while we're seeing if Chris is still here or not, the other thing worth mentioning is if you are a fan of Fallout, New Vegas is the one game not fully made by Bethesda. Mm-hmm. It also has to be one of the most popular Fallout games, you know, over time. It's become a big cult hit.
It's people the one that's got like the most lasting, like people still play
it's
that
It's got
game.
The most dedicated, like diehard fan yes. base. So when you kind of combine that with it's also the one that they didn't really make, they mm-hmm. may just want to kind of not touch anything that was in the game as a way of just doing it their own way. But also, you know, because the show is working directly with Bethesda, you mm-hmm. know, the show is canon to the games. The show is Fallout 4.5. So I think that that's the best option, or at least the most likely option. But I would like to see a couple of things. Like I said, Mr. House or some small characters. But the biggest thing, you know, that I'm looking forward to when they get to New Vegas is the presence of the NCR, because that's another big thing with this finale. I know people have been talking about online. I think there's been some misunderstanding about what happened.
Well, I've seen a lot of people say that, like, the NCR is completely... The main complaint I have seen is people saying that, like, if the NCR, if their hub was Shady Sands, which got destroyed in, I think it was, like, 2277.
It would have been around or right before the time of New Vegas.
New Vegas takes place 4 years after, chronologically, where Shady Sands would have been destroyed. So people mm-hmm. are saying, well, if the hub of the NCR got obliterated, how is the NCR then in New Vegas? And so it's like, well, remnants of the NCR are in the show. Also, the Enclave is mentioned multiple times in the show, and they kind of get wiped out in Fallout 3. So, like, basically, at the end of the day, like, these factions are never completely destroyed.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning as we talk about that, like, the big thing with the with Shady Sands. If you're watching this and you haven't watched the show and you're just like, I want to know the spoilers. We learned that Shady Sands is a town that was thriving and was actually building new technology and restarting society. Muldaver, who we thought was the villain of this TV series, but turns out to not fully be the villain. She was from the before time, because this does deal with that Fallout 4 thing of being frozen for hundreds of years. She is involved in that. And when she starts to reset life in Shady Sands, Hank, played by Kyle MacLachlan, he figures it out. He has Shady Sands nuked post-war from a vault. So Vault Tech is still nuking.
We're going to talk more about Vault Tech here in a second.
Yeah.
Because we haven't really gotten...
Because the city is destroyed. And so the NCR had a big part to play in that city. She's heavily involved with the NCR, potentially an NCR leader. They don't fully address that. But then at the end of the show, the Brotherhood takes the observatory in LA. That's where the NCR is holed up, with Muldaver kind of acting as the leader. And they're pretty much wiped out there. But again, this is... We don't know if this is all that's left of the NCR, or this is one like chapter of their, you know. People.
I don't think they're fully wiped out. I mean, at right. at the end of the day, like their ideas in their, like, look at the vault four. Like they're basically, there's like cult like elements to that vault, but also right. they're still very much NCR members to a certain degree. And obviously,
well, and we don't know what's there in New Vegas either, because we know they had a big yeah. presence in New Vegas in the game. And when you watch every episode of Fallout has a little animated credits thing that takes you like through a location mm-hmm. In the show. And at the end of the finale, that animation is kind of red and it's pulling back. It's playing a great Ink Spot song, which is actually from Fallout 76. It's called We Three, My Echo, My Shadow, and Me. And it starts pulling through this location. And when it pulls out, you start realizing that it is New Vegas, and we see the New Vegas sign. But while they're pulling through that, there is an NCR like chopper in there, like on the ground.
Yeah.
So they're still addressing the NCR as kind of being part of that.
So you think, I mean, just presenting it as a question, you think the NCR will still have a presence in season two?
I mean, I don't have a thought one way or the other. Like my thing here is just that, like, there is an internet. There aren't phones, you know, yeah. like. The entire NCR could be wiped out in LA and they could still be thriving in New Vegas.
Yes.
And they wouldn't really know until
California is also large. Like they could yeah. have one main hub in
right.
In Shady Sands. But if they're spread all across California or the regions around it, like they're going to have a lot of smaller hubs.
Right.
What do you, I mean, speaking of factions though, how do you think the Brotherhood is going to fit into what's happening in the future? Because obviously at the end of the show, they gain access to the cold fusion tech, which has powered up the observatory and everything around it. So they're now very much in power. They kind well, of it are seems the like, winners so at the end.
Maybe
of the
we
show,
interpreted this differently, because I don't think they have access to the tech. It seems like the cold fusion thing, which was in Will Zig's head.
I have questions about that for you too, that which we'll get into.
It was put into the reactor, and it had to like load in, like there was a counter on the computer that took a while, and they had to put an access code, which Rich, if we can show the access code real quick, it's a really, really cool Easter egg. Whenever you have a second, I want to pull that up and tell people about it. So they have to have an access code to put in order to start the cold fusion process to put the lights on in LA, and Hank is the one with the code. They force Hank to put the code in, and that's the code. And if you guys aren't aware, the very first Fallout game, the one on PC that was, you know, point and click, like a story-based game, not an open world like the new ones, it came out on October 10th, 1997. And so the access code being 101097 was a really nice little treat for anyone who has been a Fallout fan for a very long time. It was really neat, because I wasn't sure the exact date, but when I saw 97 there, I was like, wait, that sounds familiar.
If they ever put explicit codes like that in various TV shows or movies that have ties to larger franchise things, it usually means something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the rule of thumb.
You know, like everything in Pixar, you know, being there's just this one single number they use for every, you know, A113 is everywhere. But when they start the reactor and then they have to power it on one last time, and it kind of hits this, it all comes together and clicks in and has an explosion in the reactor, and then it powers up that part of LA with the sustainable energy. I don't think that they can then take that out and move it somewhere else.
Oh,
and
no.
Use it for something.
I'm under the impression that they'll make that their new hub, I guess.
Yeah, I think they will absolutely, because we've seen that already in the show. What we've learned about the Brotherhood of Steel, which we knew a bit in the games, but it was really more explicit here. They're not great. They're very culty, very culty. And they're all the recruits are idiots. They kind of prey on like the Lost Boys, essentially. Find people without a purpose and give them one, but the purpose is usually pretty dumb, and finding relics that don't matter. Like the one night played by Michael Rapaport, which was very funny. They had to find he said one of his missions was getting a toaster oven. Like the artifact he was after was a toaster oven.
Yeah.
And you know, as we get from Thaddeus, especially, which Thaddeus played by Johnny Pemberton, so funny. They're all kind of morons. And so what they'll do with it at this hub, I don't know, but we have saw over the show, they had this base, a very army barracks base. Right. And then the next time we see them, they have made a base out of Philly, which is the town that you've seen in the trailer, mm-hmm. where the ghoul has that gunfight. It's a very megaton looking town.
I mean, if you're listening to this, you know what it is. You know,
yeah. Philly, and so
is, I would imagine
they make their base out of Philly. And there's a conversation happening in the background. I noticed the second time watching it that they say like the locals put up a fight, but we took it. So they just straight up took this like town, mm-hmm. because they wanted it. And that's what happens at the end when they attack the observatory,
so,
and they take over the observatory.
So my thing with how they'll be involved with in season two is I think because Maximus is going to be knighted now because they think he killed Moldaver, he's going to become knighted. And with his newfound power and kind of some command at his disposal, I think he's going to try to go track down Lucy. He'll find out that they're going to New Vegas, which is where they seem to be going, since they're tracking. It'll basically work out with the ghoul and Lucy are chasing her dad. Her dad's in New Vegas, and then Maximus will chase Lucy. And I think they're just all going to converge in New Vegas. That would be my prediction. I don't know. I'm curious how much they're going to do with the Brotherhood at large, though, because they're
that's the thing. There's one conversation to pay attention to when we talk about the Brotherhood going forward. And that is, it's episode 7 of the finale, but I think it's the finale when Max gets back. He is almost killed because he brings a fake head that does not have the artifact because he's trying to protect Lucy. And the cleric still does not believe him that he didn't put the razors in Dane's boot in the first episode in order to be promoted in Dane's place. Dane saves Max essentially by saying they put the razors in their own shoes because they were scared. And Max is absolved of that. And then Max has a private conversation with the Elder Cleric, where the Elder Cleric says, you killed, or what happened to your knight, Titus? And he's like, well, he died. And he's like, and you knew about it and didn't do anything, whatever. He basically sees this bit of scrap and this mm-hmm. tenacity in Max. And he says, I can use that. You've always wanted a home. Let's build one together. I want to start a new brotherhood because the brotherhood has lost its way. I will be its head and you will be its sword. It does not seem like Max wants to do that. Max No. wants to go live. Max found vault life to be very comfortable. He sat and watched a waterfall on a television eating popcorn for what seems like hours. And had it not been for Lucy being what he thought was abducted, she was actually just Yes. being escorted out. Had it not been for that, he would have stayed forever. And then she invited him to live in Vault 33 with her, which, as we know, is not a great place to be, but she doesn't know that yet. We can dive into all that, but he does not want this life that he has now been thrust into. He does not want to be a knight in the Brotherhood of Steel anymore. He does not want to be a leader in the Brotherhood. But that's where he is.
I don't know if I agree with that completely.
I think by the end of it, that look on his face there at the end, like when they're like, oh, all hail Knight Maximus. He was not excited about that.
I think he still wants power, and I think he still wants the ability to dictate what can happen.
I think he wants the ability to make a difference. And that control comes with that. But I don't think he wants to be in charge of the whole, like, he's kind of, there's a whole zealot thing happening right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he wants any part of that. But he now does have power. He can go after Lucy if he wants. But it's remains to be seen, does the Brotherhood stay as it is? Do he and the Elder Cleric break off and form their own Brotherhood and take Dane and these other squires with them? And I also can't help but feel like his story, no matter where he goes, is going to involve Thaddeus somehow. Thaddeus was made squire to what he thought was Titus, but it turned out to be Maximus, because Maximus had killed, had let Titus die.
He'll come back as his armor. He'll be back.
That's what I'm saying. I want to see how he fits in, because I think his story will be directly tied to the story of Maximus. I think they will work together because Max feels for Thaddeus at this point. And while the Brotherhood would kill Thaddeus for being a ghoul, which he became a ghoul by taking medicine from the snake oil salesman, played by John Daly, which is a very, very funny little character that recurred through this. He took this weird poisons. He is turning into ghoul. He got shot through the neck and didn't die. And he's like, why am I not dead? It was a very funny scene.
I like the snake oil salesman was about to blow his own head off until
he was going to kill himself. And then here comes this guy with almost no foot. He's like, can you help me? He's like, oh, sure. Yeah. And he turned him into a ghoul. But Thaddeus was not aware of that until he was shot in the neck with a booby trap from Fred Armisen. It sounds like a crazy Mad Lib when we talk about the show, because you would need hours to like work through how we got to where we got to here at the end of the show. So Thaddeus is a ghoul, means he can't go back to the Brotherhood, but he was such a developed character. They're not just going to like abandon him and he's gone now. Like he's going to be a part of it.
He'll be back.
It's just kind of who he falls in with. Chris!
I'm back. Sorry.
We didn't talk about anything. We sat here in silence waiting for you.
This has been such a boring podcast. I feel so bad for everybody.
Chris, I mean, this actually sets up well for you to come back here, because I know you wanted to talk about this before, but I was going to ask, I wanted to talk next about Vault-Tec and how they're kind of involved and how they're kind of introduced in this show as being the sort of general, kind of the root of all the evil to some degree within the Fallout universe, because that's something that never really gets explored too much in the video game series. How'd you feel about just everything pre-war in the series, those revelations later on, those sorts of things?
Well, for me, as the show, like I said, as somebody who didn't play the games very much and just watched the show, I mean, I loved all the elements of this. So I really didn't know much about Vault-Tec, but I do, like, I definitely picked up from listening to you guys that you thought that Vault-Tec was evil, but you really didn't know that they were this evil as far as, like, literally responsible for the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fairly interesting. And I think it's a great parallel for sort of where we see ourselves today, without getting too heavy politically or whatever. I know that, I mean, it's just wild to me. Like, I think people don't have a lot of faith in corporations and certain companies doing the right thing. And I think that it plays a lot into like how evil people can get when it means that they're not going to make money. You know, I mean, you can look at oil corporations and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's so many different companies that, you know, are doing evil things. And it's solely because it affects their bottom line, which is, I just think, is just the worst aspect of humanity.
Which there really is. Talks to the irony about the show being on Amazon of all places. But that's a different conversation.
I mean, sure. I mean, but you're not wrong. I mean, and even though, I mean, look, they're getting sued right now, you know? So, I mean, so it's crazy. I mean, I think it's very fascinating. I think it resonates very well with the current times that we're in, and have been in for decades, to be honest. I mean, this has been an ongoing problem that's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, just unchecked capitalism is a huge problem in this country. And I think the show is really highlighting that in an interesting way.
And it does it in a way that ties back into the games too, because rampant like marketing and ads and like those elements of what is seen in the show is still very much prominent in the games. The difference is that you never see what was of them before in the pre-war era. You're only seeing like the remnants of all of this stuff. And that's what I think is interesting about what they've done with the show here, for sure, is like the games, you are only ever seeing what is in that exact moment for the most part. I mean, there's some like there's some sequences where there's some pre-war stuff, like
yeah, I mean, like if Fallout 4 starts before the war, but you're one character and it's like right when the bombs hit and you have to run to the shelter.
Yeah,
you know, it's, I mean, it's there's very like some like minimal.
There's like some very small little quests that deal with pre-war stuff here and there scattered throughout the games, but for the most part you're just rummaging through the remnants of a bygone civilization, a destroyed America. So you never get to see really any of the context for why this sort of stuff necessarily happened. And so I think by them choosing to make the pre-war aspect such a big focus of the show, everything with Cooper, him being 250 or 60 years old or however old he's supposed to be, I think that was all maybe like the biggest surprise of the show. Moving forward, I'm curious how much they continue to toy around with this, though. We talked the other day, and I think I kind of mentioned it in that discussion, but I don't know how much they can still keep doing with the pre-war element of this series in season two, because it seems like all the major revelations tied to what they've been doing in that time, in that part of the timeline, have kind of come to light. I don't feel like they would want to touch too much more on Cooper's family and stuff like that, which is another thing I wanted to get into talking about here with you guys. I feel like if they show too much of what happened with his wife and child, then maybe that would ruin the mystery that kind of still lingers around in the modern timeline of if they're still alive.
I think it's going to play along with it. Like we're going to, it won't ruin it because it'll kind of slow play to the reveal of where they are, provided that they are around somewhere. There's no way to me, unless like she was murdered, there's no way Barb wasn't part of the group that was frozen.
Which I will say, that's a kind of a thing that Jonathan Nolan is really good at anyway, is having these separate timelines sort of play concurrently. So they're revealing things you need to know at the time you need to know them. He's always been very good at that. So I agree with Charlie.
That's part of the interesting thing about the structure of the show, because again, there were flashbacks, which that happens in a lot of shows, but the show started with a flashback that took place in 2077 as the bombs hit LA. And we learned a little bit about Cooper. Then every other flashback took place before that. Because that in that flashback, we knew that he had a daughter. He was no longer working as an actor. He could not get work as an actor. We weren't sure why. We knew that he had his daughter with him and that he was not with his wife, that they were separated in some capacity, because there was, someone was making a joke about why he was would do a birthday party. And then someone was like alimony. So like
the first time. Yeah.
Obviously you're not going to be with a person who you hear say, what if we nuked the world? That's like a thing that's a deal breaker. It feels like justifiably so. But we don't know what happened between then. And so then we don't know, because her whole thing was securing a spot in one of the good vaults for herself and Cooper and their daughter, Janie.
Which clearly happened, but how? I mean, he's alive somehow, so we know he
is. But again, we know from Fallout 4 that there are a lot of different ways people were preserved in a lot of different vaults, a lot of different places. Rich, if we can get, there's an image of all those cryogenic tubes.
Yeah, that was something that I wanted to ask you guys about was...
That's Vault 31, by the way, if you didn't watch the show. Sorry, Chris, just to give background on what's on the screen.
Yeah, I know that a lot of the Vault-Tec employees have been cryogenically frozen, but how are people like Cooper or Kyle MacLachlan able to live hundreds of years not cryogenically frozen?
Well, Kyle MacLachlan was in one of those.
Okay, yeah. So, but did it say when he got out?
He was woken up whenever it was time for him to run.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it. So let's break that down real quick. So there was three vaults, Vault 31, 32, and 33, live like a triangle like this.
Yeah.
Rich, the other picture of the manifest, that kind of gives us another idea too. Those tubes that are, Bud, the guy who ran the operation there at Vault-Tec, he had a program of like future managers that he wanted to put in place hundreds of years in the line. He is now a little brain on a Roomba, making decisions in Vault 31, pretending to be the overseer. And so 33 will communicate with 31 via telegrams and stuff, but they don't know what's over there. Neither does 32. But they make like trades between the vaults. And what we learn is that Vaults 32 and 33 were just breeding grounds for the managerial candidates that were part of the Buds program, who are who you see on the screen right now, the names of people that were part of that program that Bud started. So what would happen is, as Norm found out, every single person that came over from 31 became an overseer, because that was always the plan, was for them to influence society and influence who was in charge. That's why Hank bombed Shady Sands, because he couldn't control it. They had to control this society and then rebuild society above. So they would wake up one of them, send them over as part of a trade with 33 or 32. And then when their time was running out, they sent another one. So if you look at that list, you see right above Norm's finger, you see Betty Pearson. That is Leslie Uggams plays Betty Pearson in the show. If you recall in the flashbacks, Barb has an assistant in the finale, a young woman who helps Cooper into her office. And at the end, he calls her Betty. That is a younger version of Leslie Uggams. She was put in as a young woman and then brought into Vault 33 as a young woman, like she was frozen. And then she has aged naturally in that. If you see Kyle MacLachlan, Hank, in that scene, that flashback scene, he had a de-aged face. He was supposed to be a really fresh young guy. So he was overseer for like 20 years or something, based on the timelines that Norm found. So he's been there a while, but he was frozen for the better part of 200 years and then brought back out and then aged naturally.
So what about Cooper then? What's the trick with Cooper?
We don't know where he was frozen following the bombs.
So,
but
ghouls,
we do know that they've been putting him underground, and the ghouls last.
Ghouls can stay alive forever, obviously. Like, the one got shot in the neck, it just pulled it out. It was fine. He healed. Like, so as long as you're not getting, it's kind of like zombie but rules. As long as you're not getting shot in the head, you're going
to. But it's also the drugs. Alive. You have to keep yourself.
Well, I was assuming that the drugs sort of kept you from going full zombie.
The drugs keep you from going feral.
Right, but that's what would naturally happen to every ghoul. They would stay alive for like a zombie, but they would be feral. And so he was buried in that casket at the beginning of the show. Like, when he's not needed, he was essentially brought up to be a bounty hunter. And then someone would capture him and put him down and keep him like a little drip of drug to him under the ground and preserve him, essentially.
Assume that Cooper got frozen somehow, because I think the main reason he's staying alive is because his daughter was frozen cryogenically, and I imagine
that's what we need to figure out too, because you see these tubes, that's where all these people are, but you look at that manifest and maybe there's another page of it or something that they were just looking at.
I don't think they would have been frozen there necessarily,
right?
They could have been frozen anywhere else. And like,
I thought maybe Barb would have been, because she worked with Bud and all that. Barb was not on that list. Janie was not on that list. Cooper was not on that list. And Muldaver was not on that list. Muldaver was also in the pre-war times. We don't know what happened to her, because she would not have been frozen with Vault-Tec, because she was working against Vault-Tec.
Well, I mentioned
but
this
she obviously
on the,
had money and technology to save herself.
I was going
to
say, I mentioned this on the other episode, but the tech to freeze yourself and keep yourself alive does not come directly from Vault-Tec. That comes from another company that they were working with in the show, and they had just come to an agreement to use that tech. I mean, again, Fallout 4. I mean, for context, Chris, this is a major element of Fallout 4 too. Your character in that game is from the pre-war era, and then they get frozen, and then you wake up like 200 years later.
And in that one, because so something we did know about Vault-Tec because of the games, you know, as we're talking about Vault-Tec, some of the evil we did know of them. We knew that the vaults were preservation, but they were also experiments. And we learned a little bit more about that in the show, where they're talking. Essentially, there are all these companies we've known about involved, Vault-Tec being the biggest one, Robco being a big one. All these companies were actually working together to make one big monopoly. And all of these different vaults had all these different purposes. In Vault 111, which is the one you are in Fallout 4 up in Massachusetts, that vault told people they were going to be radiation. They had to get in like this little chamber to like de-radiate themselves. And you didn't find out until you woke up 200 years later that those chambers were actually cryogenic, like freezing chambers. And their experiments were to see how people could last and be preserved without the people knowing.
But every single one had different ones. Like, I think,
I believe the people in Vault 111 did not pay for a spot. They were like told that they won a volunteer opportunity,
something like that. Yeah.
It was an experiment. You know, Vault 32 and 33 were the breeding pools for 31, which was the managerial one. Vault 4 was a vault only to be run by scientists, and they started doing all the crazy experiments and stuff. Every vault, you know, like the one CEO was talking about in that meeting, what if we fill a vault with the strongest people? and give them limited opportunity, limited food, and see who comes out on top. Like, every vault had a sinister intention.
And there, in the games, you come across a bunch of different ones where you kind of can piece together what happened in them. Like in Fallout 3, there's one where there's the entire vault is inhabited by the clone of a single person, but they've all gone crazy. So you're just getting attacked by endless waves of this dude named Gary. So it's like there's like really funny, weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
Scattered throughout.
So every one of them has a different purpose, essentially. And again, that's what we alluded to about Vault-Tec being evil, but not as evil as, well, we only can sell vaults if there's a nuclear war. So the peace treaty was potentially happening. So what if instead of letting the peace treaty happen, what if we drop the first bomb and then everyone would drop the bombs?
All right. Let's kind of narrow back the focus here towards just we're going to start wrapping up. But I want to focus on, again, just season two and other things that we want in season two. I mean, I think it's a given that we're going to see new locations and new characters, stuff like that. Obviously, New Vegas is going to be a big part. Otherwise, they wouldn't have teased it here at the end. I imagine we're going to see some new famous people joining the show's cast, stuff like that. Charlie, I know you and I probably have some different ideas on what we want to see. So I'll go to Chris first. Like, is there anything specific, like broadly as, again, like an outsider to this IP that you're interested in seeing them explore in the future? Again, season two hasn't also been renewed yet, but I imagine like...
There's no way it's will. Not, you know,
it's yeah. definitely they file
for
be
tax
renewed.
Credits yeah. in California for filming locations. Like it's
if Amazon's willing to make a second season of Lord of the Rings, they're making a season two of yes. this. I'm very relieved that that Walton Goggins' ghoul character has sort of become a protagonist of the show. They definitely set him up as though he's going to be a villain, and there's a turn where you really find out that he's actually a great guy who's just looking for his daughter. And so I'm pretty invested in that storyline now. And so that's definitely what I'm looking forward to most for season two.
I like that him and Lucy are both kind of on the same page by the end of season two, and they're going to be.
Because there's a
little bit that they have earlier in the season when he's kind of like waterboarding her or whatever. I mean, there's still a good chemistry between them. So now that they're like friends or on the same side, at least I'm excited to see where that goes.
I would much prefer seeing them explore the wasteland together rather than her absolutely. And Maximus.
I like Maximus, but I want Maximus and Thaddeus to be working together because they have such a great chemistry and they're really funny together. I'm glad Dog meets with them too, but there's a moment towards the end where, you know, earlier in the show, he tells Lucy, honey, you're like me. Just give it time. Like we're the same person. You just haven't lived up here long enough to be this person yet. Like the surface will change everyone. And she's
going to lose your nose, Lucy.
Over the course of the series, she kind of proves him wrong. Sometimes, you know, she gives him the meds to keep him alive. And she's like, golden rule, you know, like that was a really fun moment.
She tries to do a lot of speech checks throughout this game.
But she does change and she does become more ruthless. You know, we learn at the very end that her mom is like this really wildly aged ghoul who was, I think, in love with Muldaver, if I'm reading between the lines correctly. And she is being kept alive as a ghoul because Muldaver couldn't say goodbye to her. She wanted Rose to see it through. And the last thing that Lucy does before she leaves the observatory is she shoots her mom and puts her ends her misery, which was a good thing to do, a passionate thing to do to like save her from being a ghoul forever. But it was also a really painful, ruthless thing that Lucy would not have done when she first came up to the surface. She would have been like, we can fix you. We can do this. Let's take you back to the vault, all this stuff. And now she has been, you know, desensitized to what's going on. And she's like, oh, my eyes have been opened. And there's a look on the ghoul's face because she pulls a gun and he hears it. And she thinks she's going to shoot him. She shoots her mom. And he has this face of relief, but also like, there's a sadness of like, I was more right about Lucy than even I knew I wanted to be. There's kind of a pain for her losing some innocence. And you can tell like he feels for her as a companion, as a friend, as like a fellow, you know, tortured soul. I'm excited for their relationship to evolve because there's really a lot you can do with the two of them as companions, as a pair, because they really come from similar places but are also opposite sides of the coin. They've been through a lot and I think they could really use each other. To do that. And also, we got to see more Norm, man. I want to know what happens with Norm so bad. I became so invested in the Vault 33 storyline.
His arc never really ties up. They don't really show what happens. Like Bud's, it's like, kind of, you can hop in one of these cryo tanks.
Does he get in the cryo tank?
I would imagine not, but
no. Also, who knows? A little shout out to the talking brain that he runs into. That was cracking me up.
Yes,
which those are all those lights. Yeah.
He was trying to like chase him down and like trank him, but he couldn't catch him on. He's literally on a Roomba. I think the credit. If you watch the credits, it says, I believe it says brain on a Roomba. it says brain on something. I think it's a Roomba.
Do you know? Do you remember who voiced him?
It's Bud. It's the guy who played Bud.
Oh, okay.
Because it's Bud's brain and Bud's voice. I forget the actor's name, but it's Bud Askins that is the brain. But really, the whole vault thing, because the last thing that happens in the vault is Betty, who we know now is part of the Bud's program. She was, you know,
she gets promoted assistant. Overseer of the other.
She is vault, the new overseer of 33, and she says, "We still don't know what happened in Vault 32. Something crazy where they all killed each other."
I was going to say that's another thing they never really tie up. Is
we don't know what happened there. But
we don't really
know
what happened
there. Barb had that, Betty had that cleaned up without anyone knowing except for Norm and Chet. And Chet has decided to ignore it. And because he gets a new start with a woman who calls him by her dead husband's name and makes him wear her dead husband's clothes, which was that's the funniest scene in the show.
He's got a nice sweater.
The funniest scene in the show was like, oh, what a wet lady. And then her water breaks. And it's the funniest thing. Chet is hilarious. But Chet is going to be with Stephanie and this baby in Vault 32, and he is choosing to ignore what he saw, the destruction he saw with Norm in that vault. But there's another sinister element to that, Stephanie. Stephanie is named the interim overseer of 32 when they decide to start anew over there. Stephanie also came from 31. So there is more history to her. There is something she says early on where she kind of nudges Norm when he says he thinks he should kill the raiders that attacked them. She kind of pushes him, and it makes me wonder about her, because everything about her, I look at it in a different light now. When I watched it the second time, she plays so differently because of what we know about her coming from 31. So there's so much to explore with those characters in the vault, because there are so many unknowns, especially in 32 in that history, and what Norm decides to do with the brain and all this stuff. So
I really like the vault storyline. I think it's the one that's maybe the most consistent and. I don't know. I just like how it progressed. I did not think
that it was going to be. Yeah. I was like, take me above the surface. And then now I'm like, oh, man, take me to
the
Norm.
The first two episodes, they really don't focus. The first two or three, they really don't focus on it too much.
The vault is not in two at all. So they're down there. And then when Lucy leaves, there's a whole episode without it. You're like, oh, maybe the vault thing's done.
Yeah, but it's not.
But then they dive back into it pretty heavily.
To wrap this up, I mean, I wrote this down here in our notes, but like, I still just want to see some more iconic Fallout stuff. They incorporate a couple of good things, like the junk launcher. I forget what the exact name of it is, but that was cool to see as a weapon in the game. I'd like to see a Fat Boy. I'd like to see some super mutants. Fat Boys, for context, Chris, are launch mini nuclear bombs that just blow up.
It's a big
up
gun you can get that you shoot mini. It's basically nukes just, like this big.
It just launches it like a catapult or something like that, and you can toss little mini nukes at enemies and blow them up. I would like to see fun stuff like that show up. I really would like to see the show lean more into the comedic aspects, honestly, and maybe kind of do some detours into more. I think the show as it is very funny, but those elements of Fallout always have been my favorite. Yeah. I just think this dark world contrasted against this very light, humoristic tone. Like I've always enjoyed.
I think they leaned in. You think about the guest stars of the show. It's like you had Matt Berry and Fred Armisen and Michael Rapaport and Dale Dickey. Eric Estrada was in this show. Like there were a lot of really funny people doing guest bits. And I think you'll see more of that. I think there are roles. One thing that I mentioned to you, Logan, that I really want to see that ties into kind of what you're talking about. My favorite character from Fallout is Three Dog, which if you played Fallout 3, he's the radio host for Galaxy News Radio. He's the person that you hear throughout the whole game. Mm-hmm. I love Three Dog. And when you're in LA, a place that has such a deep, rich history of like disc jockey personalities, I think there's a perfect fit to have somebody like that. And they tease that a little bit with Fred Armisen, who runs a radio station that only plays old fiddle tunes with the original recordings. It was a very funny bit. But to have someone like Three Dog, who is queuing up music constantly and is part of the story eventually, but is this personality you only hear for a while. I want something like that in LA, because again, LA is just the perfect place for that. And not be in LA anymore. I mean, I think we will be too, because again, the vaults are still there.
The vaults, I guess, are still there. And stuff like that. Yeah.
That's where the Brotherhood is kind of based right now, or that chapter at least of the Brotherhood. And we don't know how long it'll take Lucy and the Ghoul to go. They might not go to New Vegas much, because they're like looking somewhere else. I mean, you think that, but we don't know where it's going. We know that Hank is going there.
I imagine, as a last thing, I mean, I imagine we'll also see the Enclave more prominently. I mean, what's his name? Is it Wilkins or Wilzig or
what? Wilzig, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's part of the Enclave,
and we don't know where that.
We don't know where they're at or what's going on, or
because he ran in the second episode, ran from a lab.
Also, that was the worst mini turret in history that shot him and his dog. Like, he had no cover,
and they shot all around him,
missed everything. Horrible. Worse than stormtroopers.
So we don't know where that is located, because everything we knew from the Enclave previously, or a lot of it, was East Coast stuff. So I'm excited to see where. Because they were like, he's going to California when they wake up the Ghoul in the first episode. Which, shout out to McKelty Williamson. A little Justified reunion there in that first episode. He mentions that the Ghoul, or that the Enclave runaway, is going to California, which alludes to me that the Ghoul was not in California and the Enclave Lab was not in California. Maybe they were already in Vegas. We don't know. But there is another location somewhere that they're going to and from. So, and lastly, Logan, you wrote Super Mutants. You are correct. I want to see Super Mutants.
They have to. They mention them. They drop a hint of them. Like, when they go to the one vault and they mention that they've been experimenting on things, I'm like, oh, this might be where they introduce, you know, Super Mutants or Deathclaws or something like that. And it's like, nope, this is just the explanation for how the Gulpers exist.
The only real creatures we got were Radroaches, Yagwai, Brahmin, and the Gulpers. Mm-hmm. But then that New Vegas tease right before that, there's a skull of a Deathclaw. So, like, there's kind of a hint of, like, hey, these things are here, don't forget. So I think we will get some bigger, crazier stuff.
More monsters, more iconic locales. I don't know. It'll be very interesting. I imagine this show is going to last a very long time. And there's
I asked them how many they had planned, and they said 1 billion. So it's going to go on long after we're gone.
It's a universe where, like, they could even kill off some of the main cast, and then all of a sudden
you could do a thing completely unrelated to this cast and just do something else, and it would be fine.
That's how the world is set up. It's very different in that regard compared to something like The Last of Us, which is so character focused.
And if you do like a where you have a long time because you want to either save money or it's going to take too long, you could have a little spinoff season set in a vault that costs no money because it's in one location. Like, you know, like, it's really easy to find new ways to explore this.
I just hope they don't franchise-ify this. Like, don't make 10 different Fallout TV shows or anything like that. And I don't think Bethesda wants that either. So just
keep
with the TV show. And
if it's going to be really a long time between seasons, you know, you can do a little 4 mini episodes about life in a completely random vault, you know, just to like have some shorts to, you know, go in between or things like that. Like, you can sustain it for a long time.
Well, like we talked about, if capitalism has taught us anything, if this show's a big hit, I'm sure Amazon's going to want to milk more and more money out of this. So we'll see how it goes. Again, season 2 is not greenlit yet. Almost certainly will be. To that end, whenever it is confirmed, we'll have the news for you here on comicbook.com. Otherwise, that's going to do it, I think, for Quick Save this week. And that's going to do it for our Fallout coverage here. I think the main Comic Book Nation show might talk a little bit about Fallout later this week if you're hungry for even more conversations about the show. But otherwise, we've got the spoiler cast here and then our review discussion, which you can go listen to as well. More than anything, enjoy Fallout. I think this is a very we've definitely climbed out of the pit of horrible gaming adaptations on TV and film, and we're finally getting some good ones now between, you know, this and Last of Us and Arcane and things are
Metal. Twisted Metal, was really good. Yeah.
Uncharted wasn't even bad, I'll go ahead and say.
It wasn't good, but it wasn't bad, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
should have been way better.
Sonic and Mario too are like, yeah, I mean, they're fun. So yeah.
Chris, did this make you want to play the games?
If I had any free time, yeah, absolutely. I think I would love to jump in and play it. Especially, I'd love to go back and play Fallout 3 just because of how many people have said they're obsessed with it. But God, I don't have time to get lost in a world like that, so I probably won't. But I do want to go back and watch the show again, because I think there's a lot there to unpack from, you know.
There's a lot to notice watching it a second time.
Yeah.
All right. That'll do it. We'll reconvene here and we'll do this again probably for season two whenever that happens. But until that time, thank you all for joining us. We will see you here next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Logan.